the car guys, Click and Clack, the Tappy Brothers, for their advice on things automotive and just about everything else on Car Talk, Sunday from 9 to 10 on KUSP. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Dr. Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in handcrafted dentistry from start to finish using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment, crowns and veneers. Information at 423-2447. And the UPS Store, locations in Monterey, Santa Cruz, and San Benito counties. Shipping, packing, mailbox services, notary printing, and more. Locations at the upsstore.com. It is Saturday, May 19th, 2012. I am your host, Miles Elam. Today on Geek Speak, we cover the week in geek news, and we take your calls and questions. It's time now for Geek Speak.
I'm lost, Miles.
Me too. We got out of sync there. Welcome to Geek Speak, your technology show for the Central Coast of California. I'm your host, Miles Elam. With me in the air room is Ben Jaffe.
Hi there. Keep in mind also that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. And today's theme is by... I don't know.
It has to be by us, because
say.
I don't think anyone else would take credit for what we have just done.
I hesitate to say Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. He actually composed the theme that we have both heard, not quite listened to, because we've been preparing for the show, and just tried to recreate very poorly. So, very exciting.
And speaking of exciting, what's your first news story, Mr. Ben Jaffe?
First, I want to say, in the second half, we can take calls, and the phone number is 800-655-5877.
See, I was going to do that actually at the midpoint, but...
Oh, well, but get your phone's
please.
Ready.
Yes, by all means. What's the number again?
800-655-5877.
5877.
5877. That's only one nine
more,
numbers.
Yeah, one more time for the win.
800-655-5877.
There we go.
And the only time I can actually do that is either sitting here at a microphone, or if I preface it with what Lyle usually says, you know, or toll free at, and then my mouth just says the number. I don't actually have it stored in my brain somewhere.
Or if you're local, you can do 408-476-2600.
2600.
Oh. You know what? I don't even know.
Call the 800 number.
Call the 800 number.
We clearly don't know what we're talking about.
476-2800. You are correct.
All right. Fantastic.
And that's not 408. That's 831. Oh, my goodness. This is just the comedy of errors.
This is very historic. Speaking of historic occasions, actually, I think this is historically the worst intro, but it's fantastic. It's really kind of
fun. No, actually, I find it quite entertaining.
Ooh.
It's just...
So
haphazard.
If we do this every week, will it be as entertaining? Or is it only entertaining because we usually have it more together?
I think it is quite entertaining because people who aren't as familiar with technology and computers, when people who are familiar with computers and technology have issues with their computers and their technology.
Technical issues, yeah.
It makes it seem more like, oh, you know, I didn't mess up quite so much. Like, it happens to everyone. You know, you just kind of roll with it and keep going.
Absolutely.
And include self-deprecating humor, of course.
Yeah, of course. Ah, we're awful. So speaking of rolling on and keeping on going, I have a story about a company that unfortunately wasn't able to do that. So this morning, SpaceX and NASA were planning on launching an historic mission.
We know who NASA is,
probably, hopefully. Apollo missions, all that stuff, U.S.'s space program. And then SpaceX is a private space company that's endeavoring to kind of fill in the gaps that are left by NASA's, unfortunately, shrinking budget. So you put them together and you actually have kind of a fantastic duo, because NASA doesn't have a lot of funding right now, and they just axed the Discovery and Enterprise and all the shuttles, you know, so they don't have a way of getting up to the International Space Station. So they can either...
They don't have a manned way. They do have... rockets.
They have rockets, but they don't have any way to get people up there. So SpaceX just built a rocket, and they were about to test it, and they were going to send it up and dock it with the International Space Station, which would be very historic indeed. However,
first public-private venture in space.
Yes, and the first docking with the International Space Station.
Although public-private, I mean, NASA has gone to contractors to do this. So, yeah. But at the same time, it's a completely separate entity that is not under the control of NASA.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And there's actually a really great story I'll put up on geekspeak.org about this launch and everything. And they were going to launch it at 4:55 a.m. Eastern time, which is very, very early for us here on the West Coast. But they had to abort it. And in fact, they had to abort it literally at the last second. The engines were shut down by automatic systems that detected that there was too high of a pressure in one of the engine chambers. And so it decided, that's not okay. We're not going to proceed with the launch.
Better to cancel the mission 1 second too early than 1 second too late.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Half a second, actually, not even at the last second, at the last half a second. So it reminds me of, did you ever see Galaxy Quest?
There's a really seen Galaxy Quest.
There's a fantastic sequence where they finally get to the red button to stop the countdown for the it's going to explode everything, and they hit it somewhere around 10 seconds, and the timer continues to count down until 1 second, and of course the timer can only stop at 1 second because that's how all action movies end. So anyway, it happened in real life.
Except that's usually to do with the fact that the heroes are just there in the nick of time, whereas I think more with space systems, it's is everything cool?
Everything's cool. Wait, everything's not cool.
No, on the contrary, like nothing. There's something that's a little bit off. Let's wait to see if it fixes itself. No, something a little bit off. Let's wait. Nope, it's still not perfect. Cut it off.
Mm-hmm.
So different scenario, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The really interesting thing I find with space liftoffs and everything is they have this countdown clock. And as a kid, I was like, oh, 4 minutes to liftoff. So it's going to be 4 minutes from now. No, but they keep pausing the clock. They do all these routine checks and then they start the clock again. It's kind of like football, right? So when I was a kid also.
It's like the doomsday clock.
So I don't know. What is a segment of football? It's some number of minutes, but it actually takes 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 times as long.
What is a segment of football?
I didn't want to say quarter or half. It's in quarters, right?
Welcome to GeekSpeak, everyone.
Basketball. I don't know. Oh, no. Is it called a semester? Is it like, what do you call it? No, I'm kidding. But anyway.
Moving on,
because we don't have to abort the show. Although that may just be easier.
Just because. No, I was saying that the fact that you didn't know that off the top of your head is indicative of the type of show that we have here.
My mother would be so upset with me. My mother is
really?
A huge football fan.
Oh.
Yeah, she'd shout at the TV as we were growing up, and it was quite comical. But I understand the passion behind it. I just don't understand the game. So I would always ask all these questions. My questions just, when someone asks you a question and the question itself indicates that the person doesn't know the slightest thing about the thing they're asking about. That's kind of like me in football. Some people with computers, they're that way with computers. I'm like that with football.
Did you catch the last Super Bowl with the Sacramento Kings?
Isn't the Super Bowl basketball? No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I did not. No. Why? What happened? What about you? Do you have any news?
Yes, I
Mr.
do
Elon?
Have some news. And I'm wondering like how political I want to get versus not. And I'm just going to start off with being a little bit silly but serious. Computers. Not very smart, but they're very fast at being stupid.
Yeah, that's a pretty good assessment.
You tell them exactly what to do, and if it's wrong, they'll do that wrong thing very fast. Or if you tell them to do something right, they will do that right thing very fast.
Yeah, if you tell it to delete the hard drive, it'll try and delete the hard drive.
Yes,
until it deletes itself. Yeah.
And to that note, I mean, this is what calculators are all about, is that there are these computers that are making calculations faster than we could.
Yeah. And they're extremely accurate. But
and hopefully your calculator is accurate. Although many of us have used the calculator that is running out of batteries and suddenly it's giving out answers that aren't accurate.
Oh, that happens?
Yes, of course it happens. You never seen that before?
No, I guess.
This is back in the day when they actually had like fixed batteries and they weren't all solar powered. And, you know.
Okay.
However, at Rice University, researchers have unveiled their new computer chip that is allowed to make mistakes. Wait.
It's allowed to make mistakes.
Yes. Computer chips in general make mistakes, but they have error correction in there. But these researchers have made computer chips that make more mistakes.
So they correct their errors less. They don't detect their errors as often.
Right.
So why would that possibly be? I mean, because the whole idea of computers versus humans, you know, you have a computer do spreadsheet math because it will always get it right.
That is an excellent question. That's an excellent point. And the point behind these prototypes that the Rice University researchers have made is that these chips are also 15 times more power efficient, or up to 15 times more power efficient.
Oh, that's interesting.
So if you have a chip that is more likely, more probable to be inexact, but then you have four of these working at the same problem, and then you just find out which ones agree more. Like if you have two of them agree on an answer and the other two are different answers, then you go, oh, well, those two. You're using four times as much power as a single chip, but they're 15 times less power per chip, which means that you have a lower power usage.
Huh. Use multiple chips, and then each chip is way more efficient because it's not checking its own errors. And then you just go with the consensus.
Right. Instead of picking the A student in the class to always make sure they get their math right,
you pick a whole bunch of B students or C students.
You pick, 15 B students, and you check to see what's the common answer they all came up with.
Hmm.
Because usually they will most likely have a commonality of being right rather than each individual one.
That is really interesting.
And for that matter, you don't have to wait for every single student there. You can actually just say, put four students on there and wait for the first two to come up with an answer and be like, that looks, you have two that agree.
You know, that actually brings up an interesting point. I was just using Google Maps to map out a route, a relatively long route, and it gave me the most efficient path that it could give. This was actually on my smartphone. So I was using Google Navigation, and I found with Google Navigation, sometimes it actually doesn't give you the most efficient path. It'll give you a path, and then if you check for other routes, then you'll find that another route that it finds is actually more efficient than the first one it gave you. So
it depends. What I find it will depend upon whether or not, like, how fit you are, because they'll be going up and down hills.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about bicycling. I'm talking about driving.
Oh, yeah. They also check for traffic as well.
Yeah. But, I mean, if I'm leaving my house and it gives me a route, and then immediately after I leave my house or even before I leave the driveway, I ask it to find alternate routes. It'll find alternate routes. It'll check the traffic on those, and then it'll give me another route will actually take 10-15 minutes less time. And my hypothesis is it's because it's very difficult. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of programming, a lot of processing capability to check traffic on a whole bunch of different routes, right? So what they do is they just have an estimation algorithm and it just chooses one.
That's
right?
Actually their search results as well. The search results are not this, I mean, they are painstaking, but they're not a hierarchical list. Versus, this is going to be number one, this is going to be number two. It's more of a, let's spit out all this data, and we'll put in this kind of filter, and we'll see what bubbles
see what
up to
sticks.
The top.
Yeah,
see what bubbles up to the top, and then use that.
So these chips, if you were to use these chips, or this kind of a way of doing things and use these chips in calculating those kinds of things where they don't have to be completely accurate, right? They don't, it doesn't have to be exact. You know, you don't have to get the route that saves you 1 minute, but it'd be better to find one of the routes that's a lot shorter than one of the longer routes. So if you use fuzzy math or fuzzy logic, you could actually come up with better results ultimately, especially because you could do more calculations because even though they're less accurate, it saves, what was that?
The less accurate individually, but in aggregate, you can get the same accuracy but with lower power.
That is so cool. So so I've got a story. It's a very personal story, and it actually has to do with traveling. So this morning, I woke up at 3:45 in the morning. And I rode my bike from Sunnyvale, California, to Santa Cruz, California. And for those of you who aren't, it's far. And so for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's 44.9 miles that I rode. And I went over Highway 9. And I climbed 3,176 feet, according to my GPS. So I don't know. I feel pretty good right now. My legs feel like they're going to fall off because it's over twice my longest distance than I've ever done. And it's somewhere around seven or eight times the maximum climb I've ever done. So, I don't know. I'm feeling pretty good about this, but the reason I'm bringing this up, aside from the fact that cycling is awesome and I've recently gotten into it, is that there's a fantastic website called Strava.com, S-T-R-A-V-A.com. And what it does is it'll take information from a GPS, and you could actually even use your Android or iPhone for it as well. It's a free service. There is a pro membership if you wanted to get additional features or whatnot, but the free app is quite lovely as well. And it'll take all of your information from your GPS that it's logged during your ride or your run or your walk or your cross-country ski trip or any of this stuff. And it'll actually give you analytics on it. So it'll tell you how far you went. It'll tell you how long your entire trip took, but also just your moving time. So like my legs are not used to going in that cyclical motion constantly for hours and hours on end. So
most of our legs are not made for that. Yeah. So, or they're made for it. We just haven't used them in that capacity.
Well, I haven't used some of these muscles like I used them this morning. I mean, God, I mean, my legs are exhausted. My brain feels relatively clear, but my legs are exhausted. But you know, it told me that although my entire ride took me 4 hours and I think 4 hours and 47 minutes or something like that, I only had 3 hours and 34 minutes of moving time. So it means that I actually stopped, and I just stopped and stood there on the side of the road for about an hour and a half, or an hour and 10 minutes.
Recounting the moments that you have left to your life and cursing the universe for your travails.
Oh, no. Actually, it was fantastic. It was very painful, but it was very fantastic too. also, I'm relatively skinny, so I was kind of... It was harrowing to find that I actually burned 1,180 calories on this ride.
All right. Now, folks, let me give some context to this in case you haven't seen a picture of this man.
When he
says
when
he says relatively skinny, that's like saying that the typical runway model is relatively skinny.
Oh, come now. I am thin. I'm aerodynamic. But... Anyway, it told me a whole bunch of other stuff. Like, so apparently when you ride, you're supposed to have a cadence of somewhere around 90. That's apparently roughly the most efficient.
Wait, 90 what?
90, this is 90 hertz. So
okay.
Your legs spin around 90 times a second. 90 times a minute, I'm sorry.
About to say, like, wow.
I'm also powered by petroleum. But I found that my cadence, my average cadence, was actually 70. So I'm not running at my most efficient rate. It's kind of like under, I don't know what the term for this for cars would be, but running your car in too high of a gear. So your engine isn't spinning as fast as it ideally should to get you the right amount of thrust.
Running in too low
of a gear. Too low of a gear.
I'm sorry. No, you're right. In too high of a gear. Yeah,
uh-huh.
You're right. Oh, my
yes.
God.
For just a moment, I was right and Miles was wrong.
Yeah.
On the air.
Well, wonders never cease.
Indeed. One more thing, though. You can also record heart rate data, with this. So I can look at a graph of my elevation, my heart rate, and my speed, and my cadence. If you have a power meter on your bike, you can record your power. And actually, if you look at my graph, it's extremely spiky.
On the radio, if you look at his graph.
It goes up. It's up for a while, and then it, you know, sits down somewhere around 130, 120. And that's because I took a lot of breaks. Yeah. So my legs were like, stop, stop. So I stopped for about a minute, 2 minutes. And then I went again and my legs were happy. So I don't know. Really, really, really fun bike ride. Really, really cool GPS and really awesome website, Strava.com.
When folks are overthinking exercise.
Right. No, it's I just like data. But yes. One more thing, actually, you can see your improvement. I've also recently started jogging, and you know, every time I go out, I get my first or second or best, third best mile. So that's...
Dude, you're going to waste away to nothing.
I know. No, I'm just going to start wanting to eat more. So I have a perfectly healthy diet, despite what outside observers who aren't me observe.
So speaking of outside observers, face detection. We've seen stories of that where you go to a stadium and there are face recognition software out there to detect if there are felons going to see a game.
Is it really that good?
Yeah, we've seen that technology was rolled out 4 years ago.
Does it work?
Yeah, it actually did.
They can detect felons based on pictures of felons.
Good probability, yeah. But I mean, they're not going to arrest the person immediately on that.
Sure,
they're going to flag
it
and then, you know, point to where the person is and then try to find them.
That is extremely cool and extremely harrowing.
Yes.
At the same time.
Let's not talk about because this is basically law enforcement, a government entity that was doing this. Let's talk about more of the commercial sector.
Oh, boy. Uh-oh.
Right. How do we monetize this? So,
how do we monetize everything? Anything.
Right. And one of the more popular things online are, and one of the things that you show up in spam is like the Lonely Hearts thing. Are you looking for someone? You know, go here.
Always.
Or if you're trying to see like, you know, meetup, you know, mm-hmm. or some way to meet up with people. There's a Chicago-based startup called SceneTap. And what they've been doing is working together with San Francisco bars to set
Why
up...
Why not Chicago bars? If they're based in Chicago. Sorry, interrupted you.
To put up cameras in these bars to catch at the entrance and see as people come in and then watch as people leave as well. And they'll match that up with the occupancy level, the expected occupancy of that bar, like how many people it can hold.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be, you know, 30 or 100 or whatever.
Innocuous so far, right?
Right. And then then you go to their app and you see, this bar is 50% full, or this bar is 12% full, or this bar is 90% full,
mm-hmm.
to decide like which bar
which
to go
one do you
to.
Want to go to. Yeah.
They also add in, and this is where it really gets stalkerish. It also will recognize, at least probably as well as any of us can, how many women versus men come in to a bar to detect whether or not it's a man or a woman.
They get analytics on that?
And so you're able to say, oh, this bar is 90% full and it is, you know, 40% women, 60% men, or some other ratio thereof.
Wow. So people are deciding what bars to go to by their by how
which ones
full
are
they
hopping.
Are.
Yeah, which ones are hopping, which ones are going to be more
and the
quiet
ratio of men to women.
Yeah.
Ooh, I don't know how I feel about. Actually, I think I do know how I feel about that. I don't like that. That
definitely has an ick factor. At the same time,
yeah, serious.
We talked about that before. The factor of ick, and then of course after it's been around for a while, people become inured to it. Like think of if you had told people all of the privacy implications of Facebook 10 years ago to people, mm-hmm. or 15 years ago, and what we now accept as like, well, you know, well, it's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just to know that this is on the horizon, though, or rather, this has topped the horizon. The dawn has sprung of this particular
groundbreaking technology.
Yeah.
So, would that just have the effect of homogenizing all of the bars' male to female ratios? Presumably, a lot of men would go to the bars that have more women, and maybe vice versa.
Well, not necessarily. If there are folks who want to go out to bars, so they don't want to get hit on.
Uh huh. But the problem is, if you're a woman and you don't want to get hit on, and you go to a bar that has more women than men, but then the men using the app see that and go to the bar with all the women.
Right, that's self-correcting. So plus, I don't know if it does a normalization for gay bars.
Oh, interesting.
So if it's mostly women, but it's a lesbian bar,
that would be very interesting if they didn't specify that with the different bar names.
Yeah, well, some of the bar names you know, and some of them you may not. Yeah, wow. But it's at the same time, how would that affect? Yeah, that those metrics would suddenly these gay bars be finding a whole bunch of people of the opposite sex showing up and going, "Hey, what's going on?" Oh, you know, like
kids these days.
Yeah, it's a brave new world.
I'm all grumpy now. You guys joke about how young I am, but I kind of feel like a grumpy old man when it comes to these new social stories and things like that.
Yeah, now this one seems fairly innocuous, but I do wonder technology and where it can go. And just because, you know, if someone has a nefarious use of technology, chances are they are going to try to exploit it. Don't call me a pessimist or anything. But what does this have to say for... I want to know which bars have the most blondes in them. I want to know which ones have the most redheads.
Yeah, I don't like where this is all going.
Yeah, which bars have the most Asians in them? Which bars have the most... I mean, these are the types of things that facial recognition can do. That are moving toward. And so while you may decide, like, well, this one has an ick factor, what does the next level have for you? Or are you okay with
super
this?
Super ick and, factor?
Yeah, are you okay with this? Or are you not okay with that? And right now we have a vague idea just because we just learned about it. But at the same time, it's like when you really think about it, like how far do you want to take it? How much do you want to allow for marketers to know that information?
Uh-huh.
You know, you're in a bar and it knows that mostly blondes are there. So do you put a whole bunch of peroxide commercial stuff up on the, you know, on the TVs?
Oh, man.
Do you target the advertisements that way? Do you – yeah, it's –
yeah, that is really weird. That actually is a very good question. That's totally an open question. How quickly I kind of wonder about myself. Am I more likely to adapt to certain kinds of change and be okay with them more quickly versus other kinds of change? Like, I don't know, things that enable sexism or you know, discrimination.
In my day,
or...
we just went to the local area just to hang out, and whoever was there, you got surprised. And
Yeah, you had to walk uphill both ways.
Dad,
to get
you're
there.
So old-fashioned. Come on, get with the times. I don't want to know what I'm going to eat.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. See, I expect to have this conversation with my daughter.
Yeah.
So one thing that is not a question... is the fact that you are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Cruise Isle's Velocity Internet and phone service. Velocity achieves download speeds of up to 40 megabits per second with nationwide phone service included. More information is at velocity.cruiseio.com or at 459-6301. And UC Santa Cruz, chosen by the National Cancer Institute to launch the Cancer Genomics Hub, a crucial step in decoding cancer, online at ucsc.edu. And Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses and tech support for home computers. Home and Small Business Tech specializes in protecting data and has been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBtech.com. Do you have a geek bit for us today?
You know, I don't. Do you have a geek bit?
Oh, do I need to come up with a geek bit?
On the fly.
On the fly. I think I could, actually. You got one?
I just have a quick mention. I just want to say that Google Latitude is pretty cool, too. In terms
Google
of
Latitude.
Google Latitude will, and this is an opt-in program entirely. But you can tell Google, hey, go ahead and get my location from my mobile phone and broadcast it to these following people. And you could say, like, I really trust Miles, so I'm going to give him...
The fool.
So I'm going to give you...
Never trust anyone over the age of 30.
Really, really granular information about where I am. But, you know, that Lyle guy, I don't really trust him. So I'll just tell him what city I'm in, right?
Also over the age of 30.
Mm-hmm.
So at least
also a bad idea.
There. Yeah.
But when it comes to, I don't know, I don't want to say I don't trust a particular individual on the air. So I'll say if there's someone I don't trust, I could decide not to share my location.
I thought you already did. You don't trust Lyle.
I don't trust him too much. I only trust him with what city I'm in.
As far as you can throw him. And he's pretty skinny, folks, so he can't really throw him that far.
That's true. Wait a second. So,
did you like that? That was a twofer.
Yeah, I know. God, I'm slow. No. Anyway, so I find it neat, especially, though, because I was able to share my location with my family members. So if anything ever happens to me, I'm on a bike ride, they will know roughly where I am. Assuming my mobile phone is there, or at least they'll know my last known location. So it's kind of good to be able to share that information. I like it.
Wonderful. And I have a joke for us.
Uh-oh.
So why exactly did Facebook go public?
Why?
Because they themselves couldn't figure out their own privacy settings.
Private, public. Yeah, two snare drums and a cymbal fall off a cliff. It's a good one.
And also in some news, we've been talking about the flashback botnet for Macs. So it's a Trojan and virus that's been coming up for Macs that we've been talking about periodically.
Yeah, it's been around a really long time.
Right, and it's been hitting hundreds of thousands of Macs at its peak. And what the flashback creators were planning on doing was having it click through for certain ads for different sites in order to get money for that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it looks like they could have brought in up to $10,000 a day. And they were hoping to get up to $14,000. Or rather, what happened was they would have garnered $14,000 in 3 weeks. So slower than they could have gotten. But now it looks like they're not going to get anything. Because those advertisers, because the flashback has become so popularized and there's been so much scrutiny, advertisers have seen which sites were being affected by this and saw the pattern and saw who the people behind it were, and they're not paying out.
That's fantastic.
In this case, crime does not pay.
Yes, there is some justice in the world. Maybe just a little bit.
And for some geek justice, or rather some tech help, if you want
geek
to
justice.
If you want to know more about how to set up your system, we can handle Windows, Mac, Linux, networking, you know, things on that
audio,
of that nature.
Video,
please give
blah,
us a call.
Blah, blah.
The phone lines are open at 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Like, I got the numbers right this time.
You got it right.
That's 476-2800 or toll free at 800-655-5877. Ben, your next story.
Ah, yes. So I want to talk a little bit more about NASA. So NASA just released an article, and I'll post it up on the GeekSpeak site so you can all read it yourself as well. But they're getting a better handle on how many asteroids are buzzing around in space. So the problem has always been yeah, exactly. They make a buzzing sound as they...
Except it's in space, so it really sounds like this. Okay, then. So
yeah.
Let's move on.
Yeah, no, it's them going through the subluminous ether. So anyone who's studied astronomy history will laugh at that one. Otherwise, look up the subluminous ether. It's quite amusing. Anyway, moving on, though. So one of our big problems is, as humans, we're very good at looking at the short-term cost and benefit, and we're very bad at looking at long-term benefit. So it would clearly be in our best interests to point a whole bunch of telescopes at the sky and try and see if there are any asteroids buzzing towards Earth that could annihilate, let's say, the human race, right? So that, right,
but I'm still having a problem with this buzzing because it implies sound. A buzz is a vibrational sound. So they're hurtling.
Hurtling implies running and jumping and tripping and falling.
No, hurtling, as in D, but hurtling with a T. Hurtling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does not imply a sound. So continue.
I'll try and remember that. So these asteroids that are hurtling.
Thank you.
We just record me saying hurtling, and we can actually go back and edit the podcast.
Yes, so we could.
You We're radio people are hearing. Yeah, exactly. Our time is much too valuable. Nah, not really. Anyway. We're not putting a huge amount of money towards this. We really, really, really should, because if an asteroid, we happen to miss an asteroid, and the asteroid happens to buzz or hurtle towards Earth and hits our atmosphere, explodes above Earth, or maybe causes a big cavity in a crater and puts a bunch of dust
buzzing,
into the air. And
if it's buzzing, it's too late. It's already hit the atmosphere.
Yeah, that's true. If it's buzzing, it's way, way too late for Bruce Willis to go up in a spacecraft and blow it up.
See, why'd you have to bring up that movie?
Incidentally,
you promised me you'd never bring up that movie.
Did I? I don't remember that. Incidentally, blowing up an asteroid that's hurtling towards Earth is a really bad idea, because there are pieces that continue to hurtle
towards
Earth.
Mass does not suddenly disappear.
Yeah, exactly.
You just increase the area that you're. Instead of a standard bomb, you have a MIRV.
if I remember correctly, Armageddon did get it right, and their plan was Armageddon.
Armageddon. No. Armageddon got two things right. Asteroids exist, and occasionally they will hit the Earth. That's it. That's all they got right.
Okay. I don't know if you remember the movie. I think I remember the movie well enough to remember that their intention was to dig into the asteroid, explode it, and then break it into two halves that would go around either side of the Earth. Very Hollywood-like thing to do. It wouldn't happen that way in real life. But and if I'm wrong about this,
it's only 2 days away. So if they split it in half, it's going to miss the Earth after two. Yeah.
Yeah. So if there are any
once
Armageddon
again,
buffs
the only thing they got right in that movie, asteroids exist. Sometimes those asteroids hit the Earth.
Yeah. I'm going to just agree with you. So anyway, the story, though, that I'm trying to cover, but I keep interrupting myself, is NASA has found that there are 4,700 asteroids that are potentially hazardous. Now, potentially hazardous doesn't mean they're all hurtling towards the Earth, but it means that we don't have their trajectory well enough plotted to say that they are innocuous. And in addition to that, sometimes asteroids will I was going to say buzz the Earth. Sometimes asteroids will come close to the Earth, get sucked around by the Earth's gravity pull, and go away, and then come back maybe a decade later and hit the Earth squarely. So it's
20 or 30 or 40 years down the road.
Exactly. Yeah, and so we need to do some math. I wonder if that's another use for our fuzzy chips that we were talking about earlier. Anyway, so this story is just talking about these various numbers that NASA has calculated. They used the Wide Field Infrared Survey Explorer, and the abbreviation is WISE, W-I-S-E, which I think it's a wise idea that they put that satellite up in the first place. I don't think it's wise that the rest of humanity isn't doing a little bit more to, maybe putting a little bit of money towards it, maybe, given that NASA's budget, what was the figure, NASA's entire budget?
NASA's budget, they go for a two-year budget sections, but their entire budget for, or rather,
their entire operational budget for all of their existence.
Yes, not just the most recent 2 years, but for,
since
the 50s.
Yeah.
Or 60s, I guess is when NASA began, early 60s.
So all of NASA's lifetime, all the money that ever went into NASA equals less than what?
Equals less than the military appropriations for the defense.
For how long?
Industry. For, I think it's for a single cycle, which I believe is over a two-year cycle. So every 2 years.
Eek. So, yeah, NASA doesn't get a lot of money. It'd be really, really cool if we put money towards this. If anyone with a whole bunch of money is listening to Geek Speak, right, maybe make a donation. So, anyway, hopefully asteroids won't hit Earth.
Or make a donation to KUSP. I'm sure it'll do just as good.
Yeah, and then we could just decry how little humanity is doing about asteroids more.
Yeah, once we're done with the money, we'll give all the excess to NASA.
Yeah, right. That's the way it'll work. Anyway.
So, I'm going to take a call from line one. And let's see here.
How do we work this newfangled board?
Paul from Boulder Creek, you're on the air. Or he's not. Oh, my goodness.
Hold on, Paul. We get you somehow.
Let's see. What am I missing here?
There are like 5 buttons you have to push, right?
Yeah, something like that. Do, 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 do. Don't mind me. Hello, Paul? No!
All right.
Fail.
So I'm going to cover a quick story while Miles tries to figure this out. So Verizon has had unlimited data. In the past, Verizon had what was considered an unlimited data plan, meaning you could use as much data as you want. And they recently, in an investor conference, mentioned, passingly, that they're going to be eliminating unlimited data plans. Now, a while back, they eliminated unlimited data plans for new subscribers.
That was AT&T, though, wasn't it?
I think Verizon did this, too.
Well?
Yes, Verizon did this, too. Currently, they don't have unlimited data plans available. But if you had one before they eliminated it, you were grandfathered in. That's the term they use for it, right? So that means that you've just been paying your bill and you still have your unlimited data plan. Well, Verizon's going to kill off all unlimited data plans, including those that were that existed prior to them killing it off in the first place. So sadly for Verizon people. Now, this hasn't been officially announced yet, like they're not doing it now, but they're planning on it.
Okay, so let's try this again. Hello, Paul in Boulder Creek.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
Glad to have you on.
Wow. This is working out marvelously this morning.
It's fun.
Hey, before I get to my question, would you allow for cluster bombings as opposed to MIRVing?
Yes, absolutely.
Or is it that order of magnitude that just a couple of big shards make big, big problems?
Well, I think the issue is more to do with the fact instead of one single focused area where you have a big explosion, you have that area spread out over a wider area, but the same amount of energy, but you actually end up being worse because you are spread out over a wider area. You have a wider area of destruction.
Mm.
I think I got that. Hey, so here's the question.
Mm-hmm.
What's up with trying to uninstall Flash and reinstall whatever works for Mac OS 10.4 on an iBook? I can't get these videos on certain sites because they say I need a Flash player, and I have done what little I could to try to uninstall and reinstall, and it just ain't happening.
So here's a question for you. How old is your computer roughly?
He's running Tiger. He's running 10.4.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if it's actually an iBook or if it's a MacBook Pro. Like,
not a MacBook Pro. It's an iBook.
iBook,
yes.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Okay. Apologies.
No problem. Carry on.
So let's see. So it.
My initial thoughts are that Flash is not being updated for the older operating system and the older chips, but I'm sure that Ben will verify this for me.
Yeah, I'll Google it. But that's definitely a possibility. Adobe has been doing some interesting things when it comes to updating legacy software. Actually, we'll talk about that if we have time for another news story. But we can Google around for this and see if Flash is still being updated for Tiger.
Well, picture this. When it says to view this, you need Adobe Flash 9 something, I think. And then I go to the site and I see that under my operating system, dial in this one. And so I've gotten that little box, you know, I've downloaded it, got in the box, opened the box, clicked on it, it doesn't install.
Interesting. What browser are you using?
Yeah, I do see that the most recent version that they support is 10.1, which is fairly recent. Flash is on 11 now.
Yeah, you should be able to install it. I'm not sure what the problem is. What browser are you using?
The site will define which version it needs, and a lot of times browsers or sites are specifying the newest version because the older ones have some security exploits that.
Let's see. Firefox is the browser, and again, when I go to the Adobe site, I try to dial in what's appropriate to my system, 10.4.
You know, one thing that you could try is you could try downloading Google Chrome, because Chrome comes with Flash already installed, and it automatically updates and everything like that. So if it is, in fact, just a problem with your installation, installing Chrome actually might solve that. Ideally, if you want to use Firefox, you'd be able to continue using Firefox. But that would kind of narrow down what the actual problem is, whether you have a problem with Flash not being able to run on your computer for some reason, or Flash having a problem with Firefox.
Got it.
And then you could go maybe from there.
Okay.
Yeah. Feel free to email us.
That was worth the call.
Cool. Fantastic.
Wonderful.
You guys do the best. Okay. Carry on. Take some more calls. Goodbye.
Right. Thanks.
Take
Thanks
care.
For listening.
Bye. Well, I would take some more calls, but instead, because our phone lines are open, 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877, I'm going to go on to another story. And that story has to do with a trend we're seeing with Apple. Now, Apple has always been a fairly closed company, not only secretive as to what products they're going to be coming out with, but also fairly restrictive as to what products can work with their systems and what software can be installed. It's the last item that is the one that's coming to fore right now, the software.
Yeah.
For phones, it's come up pretty well that, people, you have to go to the App Store to get your iPhone apps, unless you jailbreak the phone. But by and large, 99.999% of all people who have an iPhone or an iPod Touch or whatever got any extra apps from the App Store.
Yeah, and that's because when they introduced the iPhone, that was the way to get apps. Mm-hmm. There weren't other ways to get apps on the iPhone. From the very start, that was the way you get apps.
Right, and except when you have a jailbroken phone. In other words, you've rooted your phone.
Yeah, but Apple doesn't support or condone that.
Right, but it's not illegal.
It's not, correct. Right. It's not illegal, but if you're just minding your own business and you're not trying to circumvent...
You have to have a certain technical knowledge, mm-hmm. and you have to have a willingness to do so, and you have to have a willingness to, to say, I take responsibility for the risks of doing so, which there are some. But you have to have a certain level of knowledge to recognize what exactly those risks are.
Absolutely.
However, one thing that's been happening of late is newer versions of OS X, the desktop or laptop operating system, as most of the case is, also has an app store.
Yeah, and that was a couple of years ago they added, maybe just a year or a year and a half ago.
Now, you still can download software and install it manually, the same old way, drag the icon over to the applications menu. But what's happening with the newest version of OS X that has not been released yet, it's being called Mountain Lion, is that you will not be able to use certain things like access to the cloud storage. Cloud storage is being able to save files, but the files aren't, for example, just saved to your hard drive. They're saved up to a server up on the internet, and so wherever you go, your files can follow you.
It's Apple's new service. It's kind of like Dropbox if you use it, or Google Drive was also just recently announced, and that's Google's response or version.
Right, but if you want to use that API, if you want to be able to have an app that will take advantage of this technology, you have to go through the Apple App Store.
So if I develop an application and I put it on the Apple App Store, I can just go about my merry business.
You have to have
use their API. But if I develop my own application, I can't use their API?
You can use their API, but the system will not accept it because the binary has not been signed. And that is a signature process that goes through by having it put up to the App Store.
So that seems unprecedented. I mean, Apple has always had their own little private APIs that only their apps that they develop can use. And I think you're not supposed to release applications that use those.
Right, there are private APIs. This is not necessarily nefarious. That's mostly it's still a work in progress, and you don't want to publish an API before you have it nailed down. It's kind of like making, tax rules for the year. You make tax rules for 2012. Well, you don't want to change them now because you saw a bug in them. Because people have already started making their economic plans based upon what the tax code is for 2012. And so what you do is you try to make sure that you have all your ducks in a row before you publish it, because you're going to commit to it for a long period of time. In this
case,
that's
a good way
of
explaining it. Yeah. Yeah, before what they had done is they said that any apps in the App Store have to follow these certain rules. So you can't use private APIs, you can't do all these other bizarre things with the operating system. So apps like Audio Hijack Pro, which are awesome and do like everything, they're the Swiss knife, army knife of audio, for example, they can't put it in the App Store because they break some of the rules for putting it in the App Store. But it seems that this news is actually going the exact opposite route. It's saying that only apps in the App Store can do this particular thing, and apps that are outside of it.
Which I can see, because you need to make sure that access to that cloud follows through. You're using your Apple login to get this, and anyone who could fish for their login, you have a high risk of phishing exploits. You put down an app, the app says, hey, what's your login so I can get access to your iCloud docs and be able to do this stuff. By putting it through the App Store, it goes through a vetting process and you have some accountability.
So that seems like just a reason for Apple to be lazy about certain kinds of things.
But I mean, this is the same thing that they were seeing with the iPhone, which is the iPhone had fewer exploits than the equivalent Android with regard to Trojan apps. And it isn't because it's more secure than the other. It's just, it isn't because the operating systems are more one is more secure than the other. It's the policies in place for how you get those apps.
Yeah, I see that point. I think it's a fairly compelling point, but it still seems draconian and
it is
a little Orwellian even. Not quite Orwellian, but in from a symbol spitting perspective, that kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Just not so great.
To play the devil's advocate, there is a valid reason for having it, and that's the discussion that the computer industry at large is trying to have: is how do you abdicate your privacy for something, or advocate your freedom to do certain things in response to greater security?
Yeah.
We are running out of time. My goodness, I lost track of time. But I do want to take a call from line two, and that is Bill from Santa Cruz. Hello, Bill.
Hello.
You had some advice for our previous caller.
Yes, I did, about Flash Player and an iBook and Chrome. An iBook is a PowerPC based, and so Chrome will not run on it.
Oh, interesting.
It's Intel only. And the very last Flash Player that existed for Tiger 10.4 on PowerPC was Flash Player 10.1, 0.102.64.
Right, something below 10.2. 10.2 was the first one that dropped PowerPC support.
Yeah, so that's the one that I'm running on people's machines that are running Tiger.
Great.
Well, thank you for that. It's rather unfortunately a little disheartening, but we hope Paul in Boulder Creek, hope you can get a little bit further with that. Thanks for the call, Bill.
Okay, and it all works fine. Thank you.
All right, cool.
Thanks.
And you've been listening to GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, and we thank the Puppet Master for its use. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KUSP.org. Car Talk is coming up next, and it's made possible by a grant from Monterey Bay Unified Air Pollution Control District, encouraging the public to celebrate Clean Air Month by leaving their car at home and biking, carpooling, or using public transportation instead. Information about Clean Air Month is at MontereyBayCleanAir.org. Ben, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
Being my partner in crime and, of course, the craziness that is Geek Speak sometimes.
I have had a splendid time.
I have as well, and we will try to get the information up on our site as soon as possible. It may take a little bit longer today than usual. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting.